Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to Small Caps once again. My name is Kerry Stevenson. Great to see you all here today. Today I'm talking to the new kid on the block. Spoke to him once before, but it is 3D Metal Forge. Who are they? Additive manufacturing. And we're going to get into that because it's actually a really exciting sector, which is really only just getting started. And I'm very excited to talk to the Managing Director, Matthew Waterhouse, all the way from Singapore, where life is getting a little bit easier for you guys. Matthew, great to see you again. 3D Metal Forge, you had a good end of the financial year and you're doing a lot of growth. But before we get into that, for those that don't know who 3D Metal Forge are, can you just explain to us an overview?
Sure. Thanks, Gary, and good morning. Nice to be here.
Good morning.
Nice to see you again. So we're what we call an additive manufacturer. We offer a full range of services to help companies get the benefits and truly adopt additive manufacturing. So also called 3D printing, but we help clients from choosing the right part for turning from traditional manufacturing to additive. We then help them design that part. So you can, for example, honeycomb inside parts and lightweight them. Then we help them produce that part on a range of different printers, different materials, metals, plastics. And then any testing and certification that's needed after that, we can do for them. So they get a finished part from us. And we also do other services like training that help clients kind of upskill their teams on how to get the most out of additive. So really trying to give that full service so that companies can really adopt additive full force, as it were.
Excuse my ignorance here. Why is it called additive manufacturing? Are you adding something to the manufacturing process?
At its very simple level, it's the difference between additive and subtractive. So traditional manufacturing typically would start with, for example, a block of metal, and then you'd machine away what you don't need to leave the finished part. Whereas additive manufacturing starts with powder, and we only use the material that we need for the part. So we add layer after layer after layer until the part's finished. So we compare subtractive with additive manufacturing.
That surely's got to be better for the environment, additive manufacturing, because in traditional manufacturing, as you just said, you're taking things like there's a lot of waste.
Yes.
You guys, it'd be the opposite. Would that be right?
Exactly. And people are really starting to wake up to the benefits of sustainability that additive can give. Just in my simple example, then we often use much less material, sometimes up to 90% less material. And when you're dealing with expensive materials, that can be a considerable saving. And increasingly, the way that additive manufacturing works, and some of our technologies work in this way, we're able to remanufacture parts. So use the original part to build on or repair or give a new lease of life. So using less energy than starting from a new part. And also one of the things that are starting to really play out for additive is this ability to produce parts just in time, and increasingly at the point of use. So for example, we've got a partnership with PSA, the Port of Singapore, mm-hmm. and we've got a facility inside the port. So we're able to produce parts when they need them, where they need them. So you have much less transportation of parts all the way around the world. You know, you can remember the days of flying parts here and shipping them there. The emissions is enormous. So additive, in its way of producing things just in time and near the point of use, can actually be reducing emissions as well. So I think it's got a lot of interest from people trying to put sustainability in their supply chains.
Absolutely. And PSA, the Port of Singapore, and who knew, ladies and gentlemen, Singapore is a very big manufacturing hub, which I didn't know. Yes. Is that currently you've got a facility within the port? Is that the only port at the moment? And are you getting a lot of interest from other ports around the world? Because everybody's talking about sustainability. Everybody's talking about emissions, et cetera, et cetera. Sounds yes. to me like you're on the holy grail of being able to give a solution to a lot of these port facilities to not have to drag things from all over the world.
Yes, it's been very interesting. We've actually been doing this about 18 months with PSA because our sales cycle is a little bit longer and it takes time to choose the right material, redesign the part, test it, field test it. And we were actually, just recently, we converted a field test over to a production contract. So the facility that we built inside the port went live and is now producing parts. And I think the interest is beyond ports. I think a lot of companies are interested in this sort of what we call a shop in a shop, which actually gives them the ultimate benefits of additive. You know, a lot of companies will start off by producing a part with us and then producing multiple parts and then say small production runs with the aim eventually of putting equipment inside their supply chain. And I think the last year, companies have woken up to how fragile some of their supply chains are. I mean, even now, there's enormous delays shipping anything around the world.
Yeah.
So a lot of our customers are starting to explore, as part of their bringing manufacturing home, has additive got a role to play in producing some of those parts where I need them, rather than shipping them all the way around the world?
It's a fascinating area. I'd like to know how big the market is in additive manufacturing. It's not that new, but it's big growth, isn't it?
It is. It's actually a little bit older technology than people realize. But a lot of that development was still at the R&D stage and still being used as sort of one-off or prototypes. What's new over the last few years is the adoption of additive into a manufacturing technology. So we see a lot of companies that are either considering it on their technology roadmap, starting to explore it, or some of them have actually been doing it for quite a few years and it's now a regular part of their manufacturing process. So that adoption is what's new. And that's what's perhaps raising the opportunities and increasing the sort of challenges of growing this technology.
And I guess getting people comfortable with it, because you mentioned just before, Matthew, redesigning the parts. Why do parts need to be redesigned?
Well, there's typically two reasons. One, as part of a sort of so-called ordinary additive, you need to create digital files, and we need to create what we call a print file, which is the instructions to the printers of where to deposit metal and how to move the print head, as it were. And that's sort of like a very, what we call sort of adapting for additive. Where you start to get the real benefits is when you can start to redesign a part. So you could, for example, if a part doesn't need to be necessarily solid, you could have a sort of a honeycomb on the inside. So the part still performs as it should, but you've used a fraction of the weight. So being able to redesign parts or combine multiple parts into one really accelerates the benefits of additive, rather than just printing a part exactly the same as we've cast it or we've forged it. You're getting some of the benefits that way, but not really most of them until you redesign the part.
Okay, so this is an investor audience that listens to Small Caps. So I want to go into, I guess, the investment case. You listed in March. You've just opened a facility in Houston in July. What was the reasoning behind opening in Houston? Because you're based in Singapore. You've got a facility within the PSA, Port of Singapore Authority. Why Houston? And because there's lots of places around the world. What was the rationale behind that?
Well, it comes back to the markets that we serve and how we serve them. So we focus on energy, oil and gas, maritime, defense, resources. So those are the sectors we specialize in. And the kind of material that we work in, the standards that we understand and we work with, are all geared around those sectors. And what we need to do is continue to get upstream of those sectors, if you like. So if you think about Singapore as a big manufacturing sector, which we were talking about earlier, but by the time products get into Singapore, quite often the manufacturing decisions are already made. So we need to get upstream to the head office, the design centers, the engineering centers, which for oil and gas and energy are often in Houston. So
that makes sense.
We can serve both sides of the market. In Singapore, we can offer them quicker, faster, just-in-time manufacturing. And in Houston, we can talk to them about redesigning parts and changing an entire product line from traditional manufacturing to additive. So we're already starting to see with some of our clients, and we started a relationship with a refining company called Par Pacific, which showed the both sides, Singapore and Houston, working well together. We only got in contact with the client because of our Houston office. They're based in Houston. Our Houston team went into the refinery to do an analysis of which parts were good for additive. We chose some. They were sent to Singapore and Houston for reverse engineering. Singapore then produced the part, and it's now being flown to the refinery, and it's going to go on field trials soon. So the Houston and Singapore working together opened up another opportunity for us that we wouldn't have had we not expanded into Houston.
What's the next lot of expansion that you're going to do? Again, putting my investor hat on and having a look at it. But actually, probably my next question really is, let's just talk about how big these markets are, because you mentioned oil and gas and mining and refining, et cetera. How big are these markets? And not just how big are the markets, how much is additive manufacturing got of those markets? What I'm trying to find out is, you know, are you just getting started? What sort of percentage do you think that you guys have got, and where do you think that can go? Because as investors, we're looking for, okay, what is 3D Metal Forge doing, and how big can this get?
And a great question. So the additive market last year, just the market for additive services and printers, was about 12 billion. And it's been growing very nicely. Very good rates of return and growth in the market. But the markets we serve and sell into are far more interesting for us. So, for example, the global pump market is estimated to be 127 billion by 2027. And other markets like the valve market and the downhole tool market are similarly large markets. And those are the markets that we sell into. Those are the markets that we want to convert to additive. And right now, additive generally, and us as well, have got a fraction under 1%. Very, very little of those markets.
Okay.
And the real potential for the company is converting those traditional manufacturing markets to additive. And there's such enormous value in those markets. And that's just sort of three downhole tools, valves, and pumps that you can consider a huge market. And converting them over is really where the potential for what we resides.
I'm going to use an analogy here, Matthew. Apologies if it's the wrong one, but is it kind of like when computers have been around for ages, but then when they became more mainstream, but there was that lag when people went, oh, you know, I don't know how to use a computer.
Yeah.
Would you use that sort of an analogy with additive manufacturing? In other words, people have got to get their head around the fact that it's not just stick a 3D printer in the corner and let it do its thing. There's an educational component.
There is, and just on that educational component, this is why we offer a sort of training and education to our clients to help them understand the potential for additive within their companies. But I was, you're absolutely right, and I'd say pretty much every conversation we have with clients is, it's on our strategic roadmap. We've either started off and we'd like to do more, we haven't yet started and we'd like some help. But it's almost everybody's on everybody's roadmap to adopt additive. Okay. And what we do find is that there's been a lot of focus historically on the equipment side of the additive market, so supplying printer. And for a while it was sort of seen as that was the be-all and end-all. Here's a printer.
Right.
And we offer a different service. We offer what we call a full service, which has the viewpoint that there's actually a lot of things that need to be done to make additive successful. And printing is just one of them.
Right.
So I touched on it earlier, choosing the right part. If you don't do a good part selection, then you're really trying to push a rock up a hill. You're making your life very difficult for you. So using a lot of our experience to choose good parts and helping with the design process, and only then printing, and then anything you need to do finishing afterwards, and then testing, certification. It's that full range of services that I think makes adoption possible, rather than just people trying to print.
And does that make 3D Metal Forge unique? Are there other people doing that I guess, that full service in the additive manufacturing sector?
There's a few. We feel that we're relatively unique in the sectors we serve. We rarely come up against any competition. The challenge is conversion and adoption rather than there's three or four companies queuing up to do this. Right. So we do feel that companies and most of our clients, we are often the leading, sometimes the only additive company they're dealing with. And they recognize that they themselves are at an early stage of their adoption. And we're sort of going through the field trials and material testing and proving the part. So being there at the beginning of both of these companies is a good position to be in.
It's a longer sales cycle, though, as well. And I look, you listed in March, 20 cents a share. Today, the share price is a little bit weaker. Do you put that down to the fact that it is a longer sales cycle? You know, I think you're talking 12 to 18 months, and therefore it's taking time to get that, I guess, that market awareness, maybe?
Yeah, I think there's two things going on. One, as you correctly say, the sales cycle, it takes time. So it starts with a company deciding they want to adopt additive, choosing the right part, redesigning it so the tolerances are correct for printing, often material testing, equipment testing, lab testing. So it takes time, but nobody really wants to rush that. You want to get a good part at the end. You don't want to have any issues with the part. So everyone's invested in that process. And I think tied to that is it requires a new business model to make that work, the sort of full service business model. And I think we're relatively unique in that model on ASX. So explaining and bringing the market up to speed with that sales cycle on what success means to us and how that will translate into revenue as these trials become production contracts, and explaining all of the different things that we have to do, like why we have to go to Houston, why we do some training, why we do design as well as print. That's taken time for that market understanding to develop. I think it's coming. I think the understanding of what we do has been growing. I think what helped was getting that first contract through the cycle. So we've been working with PSA for 18 months. The parts were tested, material testing, plus, and then converting a field trial over to the production contract, I think gave confidence that it works. It just requires patience.
And I think it's interesting because right now with COVID and supply chain interruption, and you know you've proven it works with the Port Authority of Singapore or whatever, PSA. Does that mean that you've got other ports around the world that are putting their hands up and saying, do you know what? We've got supply chain interruption. It would be great to have a facility within our port. So if something goes down, we can do a 3D print additive manufacturing. Is that happening yet?
Actually, I think more interest has been coming from end users. So the companies that own the parts that have manufactured them around the world and then suffer the delays of shipping, those have been the companies that have been expressing interest. So, and a lot of them, particularly in the US, have been under pressure to bring manufacturing home. So those are the companies that we've been starting to have conversations with about how we can help them reshore manufacturing for their parts.
You mentioned one of the sectors that you're in is resources, and I'm talking to you from Australia. We have a big resources sector. Are you making inroads out here in Australia?
So we're starting to. We appointed a very experienced business development director who's, even with the struggles of lockdown in Australia, has been doing great stuff, reaching out to the resources sector and oil and gas sector and quite a few other sectors within Australia. And we're starting to see the results coming through. We're very pleased yesterday to announce that we signed an LOI with the Australian Missile Corporation. So an LOI to start collaborating with them on the technology. So we're very pleased to see those early signs of traction starting to come about in Australia. And we've got high hopes. I think the resources sector, particularly mining, has got a lot of opportunities for additive. The idea of perhaps being able to put printers at the mine site so that you can cut down on lead time and spare parts downtime, I think is a great opportunity.
Well, I think it's that, and we're very, very conscious over here about, you know, carbon emissions and yes. And also we're an island, and so it takes a while for bloody parts to get out to Australia. So, you know, maybe in time when we've got additive manufacturing here and we don't yes. have to wait for suppliers to come from wherever, that's amazing. Let's talk about the size of the market, because we're running out of time, and I really want to just, I think it's important for investors that are potentially looking at this sector. You mentioned that the pump market is about $127 billion, and yes. that your belief is that additive manufacturing only has about less than 1% of that market at the moment.
A fraction of that, yes.
A fraction of 1%. And that is that across all of those sectors that additive manufacturing is involved with?
Well, for us, in the sectors that we know, what we're finding is when we're talking to clients and we're exploring opportunities, they who are often buying a lot of these pump parts and valve parts have not manufactured anything additively. So we're doing often the very first valve part or pump part with them. So these companies that have a pretty large part of the valve market and the pump market are only just starting to explore it. And these are, we are very much at the testing stage. Some of them are field testing. So we're very excited that we've got some of these parts in field testing. So they're actually out in the field in real life circumstances being tested. And so far, seemingly performing very well. So we're very excited with this process.
So again, if I'm looking at it from an investment point of view, you're only just getting started and the market is huge. And you guys at the moment have got a teeny tiny bit of the market.
Yes.
Would that be pretty much?
Yes. Okay. And I'd add in a flavour that we're dealing with the right companies that have that market share. So as we convert parts through this process, we get into field trial, then hopefully over to production contract, then the possibilities and the size are limitless. It's the impact on revenue could be tremendous.
And your timing is very good. What with, sorry to say it, the C word, ladies and gentlemen, but COVID, supply chain interruption, but also all this focus on, you know, ESG and making sure that we are not impacting the environment. I think it's a really good timing. Okay, we're yes. running out. Oh, speaking of timing, we're running out of time. You know what I'm like? I always end my interviews with, give my investor audience out there three reasons why now is a great time to invest in 3D Metal Forge. And the ASX code, ladies and gentlemen, is, I'll remind you again, 3MF. Over to you, Matthew. Give us three reasons why now is a good time to invest.
Thank you very much, Kerry. Number one, we're a de-risked investment. We've been doing this for 5 or 6 years. We know what we're doing. And this isn't stuff coming out of R&D. We're ready to go and we're up and running. We've got facilities up and running, making parts on an everyday basis for clients. Two, our client base is in the sectors that are growth sectors for additive. We operate in the pumps market, the valve market, with the right client base that can help this grow. And thirdly, the size of the markets that we're selling into are huge. We right now have a very small share of those. We're making inroads, and we expect that it will help us grow tremendously over the next few years.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. They're only just getting started, so check them out. 3D Metal Forge, as I said before, the ASX code is 3MF. Matthew Waterhouse from Singapore, thank you so much for joining me on Small Caps today.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.